The Daily Connect Podcast.
And it's Friday the 16th of November and it's Stephen Scott back with you here on the Daily Connect Podcast for Friday. Lovely to be with you. Thank you for downloading. Now, coming up, we are going to be talking all about a range of issues, actually, including perceptions of sight loss, personal independence payment, and would you choose a guide dog or a white cane as your mobility aid if you don't already use one? Or, if you use a white cane, would you ever move to a guide dog? Or vice versa, there are people who go the other way, believe it or not, and actually choose to have a white cane instead of a guide dog, even after having the experience. So we're going to get into that with our forum today. Joining us for that, we had Maya Liam Haynes on the show from RNIB and visually impaired comedian Georgie Morrell. But before we get into that, I thought we'd talk a little bit about fundraising for RNIB. You know, oftentimes when you hear about that, you think, oh, money in a tin. Yeah, there is a bit of that. But you know what? It's also about trying out new things. And, you know, why not fundraise for RNIB, but also have some fun at the same time? Well, Elizabeth Wagner talks this week on the programme all about some of the opportunities that are available to all of us to try, including blind and partially sighted people, to, you know, try something new, but also raise money for the charity. And she begins by telling us about some of the events that have happened this year.
So we've had lots of success with trekking events this year. It's really exciting. We launched two brand new trekking events and we had a real aim to make them genuinely accessible. We're working with our partners to make sure that was happening. And we managed to recruit over 40 people to take part in treks for Team RNIB this year. And we've raised over £30,000, which is amazing to go from not raising anything to that amount. So the two events we had were the Ben Nevis Challenge and the South Downs Trekathon, which was a 26-mile trek along the South Downs coast. Yeah, we had just a real mixed bunch of people taking part. It was mainly new people who hadn't done events for us before. We had a number of participants who work for Specsavers, one of our charity partners. The weather is always a bit of a challenge with challenge events, no pun intended. We can never plan for that. We can plan for everything else, which we do, but we can't plan for the weather. So South Downs Trekathon, we had about 30 degree heat that day. So we were trekking 26 miles. So not only did we cover a lot of distance, but it was a very, very hot day. But we had amazing support from the event partner that we work with, making sure everyone was fully stocked on snacks and water, did lots of stops, making sure people had hats on and sun cream and all that kind of stuff. And it was such an amazing kind of team effort, everybody supporting each other, people looking after each other, you know, checking for blisters, all that kind of stuff.
Lovely.
There's some incredible places across the UK, so we want to make the most of that. It, you know, it makes it easier for people to get involved. You know, if it's only a 1 or a 2 day trek, you know, you're not away from home for too long. And also it means that the fundraising is fairly reasonable. So for example, for the South Downs Trekathon, we asked people to raise £350, and for Ben Nevis it was £495. So, you know, that's a decent sum of money, but it's not kind of so much that it feels kind of unachievable for people. So if you missed out this year, you can get involved in 2019. We're also adding two new treks as well. So it will be a Jurassic Coast Challenge and a Pembrokeshire Coast Challenge. So two stunning parts of the UK that, you know, are rich in history, and people can get involved in those. So you can drop us an email on events@rnib.org.uk, or you can visit the RNIB website, and that's rnib.org.uk/events. Either way, you can get in touch with us, and we'd love to hear from you and love to get you signed up.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Coming up, we're going to hear from two visually impaired people who've been trying out the challenges that Elizabeth was talking about. We'll hear about climbing Ben Nevis and jumping out of a perfectly serviceable plane.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This is the Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio, and as it's Friday, it's time for the forum and an opportunity for us to discuss the issues that just drive us all crazy. Let's join our guests this week. We've got Maya Liam Haynes, who's with us from RNIB's social media team. Hello to you.
Hiya, you're right.
I'm good. Also, I've got comedian Georgie Morrell, who's with us as well. Hello to you, Georgie.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. First time on the forum for both of you, actually, which is fantastic. Well, listen, thank you so much to both of you for coming on this week. Lots of things to discuss. I think we'll maybe go to a topic that kind of has, I guess, been a little bit forgotten as a result of Brexit. I don't know about you guys. I am sick of hearing about Brexit. I want it over with and done. I want either I want it cancelled or I want it to just get on with it. Either way, I am sick of this TV show and I want it to end. It's like Love Island to me. So, apologies.
It's the worst farce, isn't it? It's
yeah,
a sitcom we didn't ask for.
A sitcom we did not want. But one of the stories that's kind of been missed is the ongoing issues around the changeover from disability living allowance to personal independence payment for a lot of blind and partially sighted people. It's an ongoing process. Some people haven't even had their letters yet to say, let's move over. They've got that joy to behold. Can I just ask, and you know, feel free not to answer this, but, you know, have you both been through the process?
Yeah, I'm in receipt of DLA still. I've had the letter through saying we're changing over to PIP and you are on the waiting list.
Right.
And it's been a good few years that I've been on, and I'll stay on the waiting list as long as I can. From what I've heard about PIP, it's an absolute disgrace to the process.
I switched over to PIP just before I moved into my own flat because I was worried that obviously, you know, it might take a little while and things. So I voluntarily switched over before they kind of caught me, as Georgie says. And so I just chose to switch over.
Well, I'm on public record as saying I actually made the switch voluntarily as well. And I did it because I learned through a welfare rights advisor, and I strongly encourage anyone who's, you know, wondering about all of this to speak to a welfare rights advisor, because they are brilliant people who just do not, they are the unsung heroes of this whole process, because they are there to help, they can guide you through the process. But actually what was told to me was I was on the wrong level of DLA for years, to the extent that I was, you know, on such a low rate, wrongly, because it had been set when I was 14 years old, when I knew nothing, arguably I still don't. But, you know, I had no idea. And as a result, you know, the changeover to personal independence payment was a big deal for me in that respect. So it was worth doing it and making the move. But I can totally understand, Georgie, after going through the process, of why you are concerned and reticent to do so.
I mean, I'm glad to hear that you came out better for it, but I will say that you're one of a few who will. The process has been designed to, you know, save some money where the government can post the recession. And also the process of the assessment is, I mean, it's never been much fun, I think we'll all agree, but it's a necessity that we get on with. But the way that they've changed it is so ill-informed. And measuring something like eyesight and visual impairment is tricky, and it's not the same for every person, and they clearly want it to be. A friend of mine has just had to have his one-on-one with an assessor and basically say how blind he is, having already written it down. There's something terribly undignified about it.
My result of it was I felt it was a bit of a bittersweet victory in some way, because what I came out of it with was a report which basically told me about all the things I was pretty useless at.
That's nice.
Yeah, and that was kind of the, you know, in a way it was, you know, congratulations, you're kind of useless. And that was how I felt at the end of it. You know, I'm not saying that's the case, but it's just, you have to describe in the process, and Miley, I guess you were the same here, you have to describe almost your worst day. That's how they tell you to look at it. Think of your worst day that you have. Because, of course, it's, I think for all of us, especially us three, I think there's a desire for us to sort of showcase our talent and what we can do and how independent we want to be. Actually, that goes against you, doesn't it, Maelia?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the main thing that I learned, because I was very fortunate when I was 18 or 19, I think it was, I applied for DLA for the first time by myself at university and filled out the forms and everything. And I got somebody to advocate for me, somebody from the university, on the advice of my family. They said, you know, get someone to help you out with it, because it is very difficult to do. And so once you've had someone fill it out with you like that, even just once or twice, they know to ask you the right questions, they know what to put down. They say to you, if you've ever had such and such even once, put it down, things like that. Things that you wouldn't necessarily think of if you're filling it out completely by yourself. And then actually that meant that I was able to fill it out by myself, occasionally with a little bit of help as well. but mostly on my own, because I knew how to fill it out. So that would be my biggest bit of advice for anyone, you know, applying for the first time or indeed switching over. Get an advocate, as you said, Stephen.
It's interesting because, you know, what my mother said to me at the time, you know, just play on it. Just act it up, you know, tell them, you know, everything is bad, all the rest of it. And I remember reading the report at the end and thinking to myself, I haven't told a single, not untruth, I haven't even exaggerated here. And actually, yeah, that was the bittersweet point for me. I hadn't exaggerated anything. I had told the truth to the letter. And it just kind of made me feel a bit, I was pleased at the result, but I just felt a bit, as a result of what I had to showcase to get to it. I hate the word benefit. I don't know about you guys. It's not a benefit. No. It's a necessity for our lives.
Yeah, benefit sounds terribly patronizing, doesn't it?
It does.
It's your benefit and off you go. It is bittersweet, and when it's sort of laid out for you like that, it really is quite something. But I think we're all of that generation of where society hasn't sort of adapted for disability, we're still adapting for it. So we'll just sort of get on with it a little bit. And then when you sit down, you go through it, you're like, well, actually, this is how it is, and I should have said something maybe sooner, but the world hasn't been as accommodating. But it is changing, thankfully.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back in a moment because actually this kind of ties in nicely to our next topic that Maya Liam wants to bring up this week, and that is around the perceptions that people have out there of us as blind or partially sighted people. Stay with us in the forum. We'll get to that in a moment.
The Daily Connect podcast.
More from the forum on the way. But first, let's turn to fundraising once again and the opportunities that exist with fundraising. No more do you just have to stick money in a tin. Yes, that would be lovely if you do that. And thank you, by the way. Thank you if you do that with many of our fundraisers who spend lots of time volunteering their time to maybe stand in supermarkets or, you know, on a busy high street. And, you know, if you walk up to that person and put some money in the tin, well, you know, God bless you for it. Thank you for that. But, you know, some people also like to try some challenges of their own and raise money at the same time. And one way to do that is to, climb Ben Nevis, as this visually impaired woman did.
I wanted to do the Ben Nevis challenge because I have done some walking up in the Lake District, Garfield Pike, Coniston Old Man. I've also done Snowdon, so Ben Nevis was the third one I needed to do to get all three done. Granted, when I did Snowdon, I had some sight, but all the others I've done without sight. So when I seen the Connect magazine, I thought, let's go for it. And the Ben Nevis challenge was going to be first time I'd done this challenge with new guides I'd never met before. And as it turned out, the two guides that were going to guide me had never actually guided a blind person before either. So it was the first all-round for all of us. On the morning of the walk, I woke up and a mixture of excitement and nerve. I knew that it wasn't going to be an easy climb, although I didn't appreciate how rocky the actual climb was going to be. My guides were both excellent guides. They were both helpful, very informative in their descriptions of what I was walking on and where I had to step. And we were all very excited to be doing this challenge, as none of us had done it before. When we finally reached the summit, it was a mixture of relief and excitement. I just couldn't believe that we'd actually made it. There were several times going up, I knew that Phil, who was our leader, was aware of the time because he had his own set targets where we had to be on different parts of the mountain. And all I kept thinking was, we've got to do this because I don't want to be the one that held the other three back. It was a case of just encouraging them to keep going, because I know that Graham was struggling because he was my main guide, especially on the rocky bits. And the other to Lizzie and Sheena were behind me. They were also starting to tire. And once we got about half an hour from the top, we just all knew that we were going to make it. And it was a case of the adrenaline that just kept us all going. It was very misty on top, and there were times when the visibility was very, very poor, and it was very cold. To say we were in August, it was about 0 degrees, if not lower, on the top, and quite windy. I didn't have any problems or thoughts about coming down because I knew it was going to be far easier for me to come down than it was going up. I think overall the experience was one I will never forget, but it's certainly something I would recommend for anybody to have a go at. When I lost my sight in 2007, I honestly believed I wouldn't be able to do any fell walking ever again. And I've overcome that with encouragement from friends, and I would recommend any actual event activity that the RNIB put on to anybody.
Sounds good, doesn't it? I mean, lots of great opportunity there, and thank you for sharing that. Coming up, we'll hear how one man decided he would jump out of a perfectly serviceable aircraft, all for charity.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This is the Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Stephen Scott, and with me this week, I've got Georgie Morrell and Maya Liam Haynes in the studio to discuss all kinds of different issues in the forum this week. And Maya Liam, you wanted to talk about perceptions. So perceptions, I guess, of sighted people towards us. What's your story there? What's your experience been?
It's tricky because, I mean, the way that my family and friends describe it is, you are your own worst enemy. And I go, what? And they say, well, it's because you have very little sight, but you get around so well and everything that nobody would know. And it kind of goes back to that kind of, you know, you don't look blind type thing, which we all hate. But actually, for me, that's kind of a compliment, because personally, I want to kind of blend in as much as I possibly can. Well, I can't blend in with all the makeup I wear, but that's another matter. But no, in terms of kind of, you know, the partially sighted / registered blind thing, you know, that's the other thing. How do I define myself? Do I say I'm registered blind? Because, well, I am. I have such a small field of vision. But that small field of vision that I've got is so useful. Do I then say I'm partially sighted? So now I just go for both. You know, and even things like I can read standard print in a book on a very sunny day if it's the right light and all of that. But, you know, sometimes I need larger print and all that sort of stuff. And that's if the standard print is only if it's, I've literally got my nose in the book. I mean, people say, oh, they've got their nose in the book. I've literally got my nose in the book. So it's tricky, kind of, you know, dealing with people, especially people that maybe don't know you very well and things. You know, I've been kind of dragged across the road before. I'm sure a lot of people have had that, but where I've had the hand with the cane in it kind of grabbed and dragged across the road, and I don't say anything because I think, oh no, you're trying to be really nice, and you know, I don't want to make a scene for you or for me. So I just kept very quiet, waited until they'd gone, then turned back around and crossed over again because I didn't even want to go over it.
Yes. I mean, Georgie, you're in the public eye. You know, you're a comedian. You do stand up, and you know, how do people treat you as a visually impaired person? Because you make quite a deal of it in your act. That's kind of part of
your
act.
Yeah, it's like 99% of my material. It's because as you're saying, I don't appear visually impaired.
Are you one of those? People that don't look blind? Is that the?
Yeah, I'm one of those.
I always wanted to meet one of them. I don't know. I might meet a person who does look blind. I've never met this person.
One of those. We're a rare breed of gremlin.
So when I do it, I have to almost be quite tentative with an audience. So when I do pull it out, I have to almost do something quite self-deprecating to ease them in, because you do get that vibe of audiences as if they're being tricked. It's like, well, we can't see it, so it's not there. And people like to box, they like to label and not to be too challenged. Not everybody, not everyone at all, but it is something I'm finding with audiences more and more. And that's where I want to put you. So I have to work that little bit harder to get them to be on my side with it. And it's like, no, you're fine. This is just part of me. And don't worry, here comes the funny anecdote or the jokes or the story that you're here to listen to. So there is this sort of weird sort of pushback with it. And I found recently it's something I was saying was it's sort of about identity and not letting people decide, what box that you fit into. So I'll be one thing on stage and then I'll do other bits on TV and radio and have to sort of take on those sort of different personas. And then I asked myself not long ago, I was like, well, who am I doing this for? It should be for me, not to make everybody else comfortable. And that's something that I'm addressing at the moment and actually using for my new show. So there you go.
So do you think that, I mean, from your point of view, the work you do is almost that you are psychologically working out who you are and how you should present yourself to the world through your show?
In a lot of ways. I think it's certainly what's informing my new show, because I've had a good couple of years of work and working on shows, and then I just sort of hit something this year of like, why am I doing this and what am I doing it for? And is the person I'm presenting, is this really a fair image of me and also of disability? Because when I go on certain things, people, you do get that thing of, well, you're the voice of disabled people. It's like, no, I'm just me. It's just my story and my experience, and sort of desperately trying to get people to see the individual and not the disability. And it's what's sort of coming through with the new show has been the inspiration for that. And been sort of, not, I wouldn't say therapeutic's the right word, but it's been very, very interesting to me.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. You know, it seems to me that anybody who speaks out, it's almost like anyone who leaves the shed of blindness. Terrible analogy, but the shed that houses all the blind people. Someone emerges from it and says something, and suddenly you are the voice of everyone in there. Which doesn't seem very fair to you or to indeed anybody else.
No, and I think there's an expectation as well that because you are, if you've been through challenges and things, your disability and all of that, you're supposed to be good and almost quite saintly and inspirational. It's actually not. I'm just human. And an absolute little, sod most of the time is the reality, and it's trying to get that across. That's not going to change. That's, part of who I am. And I definitely want that to be challenged, because I think that'll get us a hell of a lot further.
I think
keeping putting people on their pedestals and making us superhuman.
I think going back to my Liam's point, though, which is interesting around, reading, for example, and that's a really good example you bring up, because I've got friends of mine, and it happened to me years ago where someone would say to me, so you can read. Oh, well, you can see fine then. It's almost as if they've caught you out.
Yeah, you got me. I'm flying the whole time.
Yeah, you got me. I can read a book.
I can see fine.
But that's quite frustrating, isn't it, my Liam, that the fact that that's the kind of place we're in, that we have to almost constantly justify who we are.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I mean, I get used to justifying who I am on a daily basis to everybody. I mean, not only
you do though, don't you? Because you have to almost. That's what you're
doing. Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, not only am I partially sighted, I'm gender fluid as well. So which box do you want to, put me in today?
You must blow people's minds.
Yeah, they must not have a clue what. Well, that's the thing. It's almost like a buffet of choice to discuss with you. And actually, this is the annoying thing about it. There are some subjects, and I think gender fluidity is probably one of them as well now, along with blindness, where people will almost feel they have the right to ask questions. I don't know, and please, if someone's listening who's in a wheelchair, or someone who's deaf, partially deaf, has the same experience with their disability, because I don't know if that's the case. I was talking to someone about this the other day. I was saying, if you go up to, if someone walks up to you and says, I'm a bit deaf, sorry, I can't hear very well. I don't know anyone who goes, oh, really? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? That doesn't seem to happen. Whereas with blindness, it's a case of, and I saw this actually, R&IB tweeted this just the other night, where they said, someone says, hi, I'm visually impaired. And then it's you're saying to yourself, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it. And then they say, how many fingers am I holding up? Oh, come on, And it's like, how many times has that happened to us? If it hasn't happened to you, it will.
That's my favourite, actually, is the kind of how many fingers am I holding up thing. But actually, I think it's really good to be self-deprecating as well. So, as Georgie was saying, so a lot of the things that
that my friends really like is that, for example, I went to a party relatively recently, and I went to this friend's party and tripped over a cable for a Mac or something that was charging on the floor. I'm more worried about their computer, so I'm going, oh my God, is it all right? Is it connected to anything? They're going, no, it's a charger. Are you okay? I'm going, yeah, mouthful of carpet, I'm fine. So I think it's a lot, and then it makes everyone else a lot more comfortable, and then, you know, a couple of people that didn't know me very well or hadn't met me before were like, oh, are you all right? And then I was able to go, oh, yeah, just using my half an eye to get around the room.
You're right, and Georgie, you must do this as well, where you kind of almost say, well, you know, yeah, I can see so at all, you know, and that's basically it. You know, what else do you want me to tell you? We shouldn't
need to justify. I've been with visually impaired actors recently, and we said that thing of we've heard them all, make the joke first, then it's done, and it's out there, and it's able to use everybody. I'm more than happy to do that, because, you know, it goes both ways.
Try not to personalise it, probably, is a good piece of advice, isn't it? Try not to come across, at least, as if you feel offended or hurt by the fact they're asking the question. Because like you say, Mylium, we're getting this question all the time, and almost if we try and kind of either make a joke out of it and it's difficult, and because it's mainly difficult because it depends where you are in the whole process. If you have just announced that you're losing your vision or it's just happened to you, you're not in the mood to make jokes. No, it's not funny. Really, no. It's not something you find. And you will find that people just, truth be told, people will back away because they don't know what to do. And they'll start maybe backing off. Whereas years later, when you have figured out a way through it, hopefully by listening to interviews like this and, you know, reading social media and accounts online and blogs of people who are going through the same, you then might be able to make that joke. Anyway, speaking of jokes, Georgie Morell, you are a comedian. Remind us, you've got the new show coming up. Just before we move off, tell us where we can come and see you and heckle you.
Gosh, yeah, where am I? Next up, I've got the new show's a work in progress at Leicester Comedy Festival on the 9th of February. And if you go to follow me on Twitter and go to my website, I've got little bitty gigs in between, mainly in London. And I think that's it for now.
Okay. All right, well, listen, stay there. We're going to come back after the news and talk more about Guide Dogs versus Canes. The debate continues here.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, before we get to that third part of the forum, and also something for the weekend, which is coming up with Chris as well, let's go back to the fundraising story we were talking about earlier, and how you can raise money for charity, but also try something new at the same time. This visually impaired man told us about his experience of jumping out of a perfectly serviceable plane.
So I took part in the big jump because I wanted to raise some money through the RNIB and to also show visually impaired people that there is nothing that we can't do. And on the day itself, I was feeling quite nervous and hoping that it wasn't going to be cold when I was up in the plane. But when we were up there, the instructor was behind me. He was going through all the manoeuvres again. I was thinking, how the heck am I going to remember all these? I hope I don't do something wrong. But when we jumped, I was hanging over the side for a couple of seconds, wind blowing in my hair. And then the instructor kind of let us off the plane and we were falling through the sky. Oh, it was absolutely awesome. It was very cold on my face, but it was just like, it was just falling through time. I couldn't obviously see the bottom. And when we landed on the ground, the instructor was saying, oh, put your legs up. I kept thinking, oh, are my legs high enough? Feet touch the floor. And it was just like a sense of accomplishment just come off me. It was like, yes, I have done this. And what I would say to other people, if you are visually impaired, is definitely do it. It's a feeling like no other that I've ever experienced. There was no barriers to it. The person that I was paired with told me everything that I needed to do, showed me physically all the manoeuvres that I needed to do, helped me get into my suit. When we were up there, always checking if I was all right. And then actually when we were falling through the sky, telling me what was about. So we're saying the sea's over that way. Oh, that's a lake. Down there, there's grass between us. The people are to the right. Just like having audio description behind me. It was just amazing.
It does sound good, I must say. I think there's a running tally in the office at the moment to see how much money it would cost to get me to jump out of a plane. I just think they want to kill me, quite frankly. That is a way to do it. You can raise money that way, try some new experiences, check it all out and find out more at rnib.org.uk. And when you get there, search for fundraising. And in particular with that event, which you can do again next year, it's called RNIB Big Jump. Try it out.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This is the Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. I am with my Liam Haynes and Georgie Morrell. Hello to you both.
Hiya.
We're back in the forum this hour because, well, why not, is what I say. Let's get back into our conversation. And in particular, the subject this week that I thought was quite interesting, got a lot of reaction online, was guide dogs versus white canes. Now, I'm not suggesting that we put these two against each other, but it is interesting to see people's views on what they like. I think my favourite comment this week has been, what about driverless cars, which I think are great, but maybe not around Asda. I think that might get a bit annoying for people. Is, you know, why is a Ford Focus in the milk aisle? You know, mind you, I like the idea, especially if I do have to get out of it. So let's talk about that thing. Both, well, all three of us are, what, white cane users? Are you a white cane user, Georgie?
No, I'm not.
Oof, are you one of those that don't use anything?
No, I like the element of risk.
Yeah, the cars will always stop. They'll always
stop.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah.
Of course they will stop for me.
But, Myliam, you use a white cane, don't you?
Yes, I use a white cane, but it has a pink handle and a pink tip, and I call it Ari after Ariana Grande, so that makes me very happy.
Well, do you know, it's funny, I thought you might say that because I was going to say white cane, but actually it's not really a white cane, it's a pink cane. White and pink, isn't it? I was actually going to ask you that. Have you named your cane? Because that was another subject that kind of came out of this, that a lot of people are saying that they name their cane. So Ari is the name after Ariana Grande.
Yeah, and I've got another one called Sharon after Sharon Osbourne and the X Factor, because my family say I'm like her.
Right, okay. So different canes for different purposes. What colour is Sharon?
Well, Sharon is my everyday one that I take everywhere. So I take her to work and all of that sort of stuff. So that's the one with the pink tip and the pink handle. My Ari one is bright pink.
Oh.
And I intend on taking it when I go to see her on tour, and I'll be screaming in the front row, I should imagine, with all the other hardcores as well.
I have to be honest, I only learned who Ariana Grande was recently because I'm very old-fashioned.
Fair enough.
And I know very little about pop music other than the fact it exists. Georgie, first of all, are you an Ariana Grande fan?
Oh, who isn't? Who is it?
That's a great answer.
She's a national sweetheart now.
Well, she is, yes. A lot of people.
We've adopted like her, I think.
Yeah. I have to say, do you know what? Some of her tunes are actually pretty good. I kind of like her, some of her stuff. It's not too bad. It's not really aimed in my direction, obviously, but, you know, that's okay. So, Georgie, right, I'm going to pick on you on this one. So you don't use a cane. Would you, if you had the choice... well, you do have the choice, actually. But if you were going to go down the route of using a mobility aid at any point, would you pick a white cane or a guide dog?
I'd like to think I'd go for the dog. I love animals. And the thought of getting, you know, my own little helper as well just would be too much fun. I mean, I spoil it rotten, useless.
Yeah.
But they are extraordinary. I'm always blown away by guide dogs and how they're trained and how they know things. They're terrific. And also a great companion, depending on your disability and how much you get out and about. You know, you've got a constant companion, which is sort of what a dog is. So they're not just there for the logistics. You know, they're there for so many reasons. And I've just been reading up on the recent argument that was on, is it this morning? The show? Good Morning Britain, sorry. About them being unethical, and it's just the stupidest argument I've ever read.
Yeah, this was the argument made by someone who suggested that guide dogs are unethical because we don't ask their consent to do the job, and we're making them work, which is ridiculous. Because of course, dogs like that kind of structure in their lives.
Absolutely. I'm at my parents at the moment. They have two Irish red setters, and they like routine. They like having a job to do. That's why we had dogs, why we bred them from hundreds of years ago. I mean, this woman's argument is based in absolute ignorance, and she needs to research it a damn sight better. And most guide dogs I've ever met, they're fine. They have great lives.
Well, I mean, So before I find out about your side of things, Maya Liam, you know, from my point of view, I'll put it out there. I have a white cane, but I'm on the guide dog waiting list. So I'll hopefully have a guide dog within the next decade. All going well. But I am looking forward to that. And I think if all goes to plan, you know, it will be a huge difference to my life. I know that. Maya Liam, white cane or pink cane or bright pink cane, why not a guide dog?
Firstly, I have to kind of preface all of this by saying that, you know, I have a good few friends and colleagues and things who do have guide dogs, and they're a fantastic, fantastic thing for many, many people. And, you know, I really, really kind of enjoy watching them work and having the odd free run with my friend's dog, which is really, really nice.
Mm.
For me, I think I'm very happy with a cane, personally, and I know that for a lot of people, kind of a cane is a stepping stone to a guide dog, which as it should be, you know. But actually, I'm so used to using a cane now, and I'm also like more partial to smaller dogs. And we have a very small family dog who's a miniature Dachshund, and she's adorable. And for the moment, I'm quite happy with that. That doesn't mean I wouldn't consider a guide dog in the future, maybe. But also, you know, I know you can take guide dogs to lots of different places, but it's things like, you know, sometimes I go out clubbing on Friday night with my friends and don't get back into the morning. And, you know, with a guide dog, there are kind of lots and lots of considerations. And for my circumstances at the moment, it's just not quite right. And I can't really see my need for a guide dog changing, but that doesn't mean to say that I wouldn't be open to it if it ever did. But for the moment, I'm very happy with a cane, and why not? If I can customise it, then fabulous. But equally, if guide dogs work for people, then wonderful as well. You know, I have a very kind of balanced view on these things. Whatever works for the person, really.
I would say that I don't agree with the idea that a white cane is a stepping stone to a guide dog. I actually hear quite a lot of people talking about it. When I told people I was on the list, someone said to me, "Oh, you're upgrading." And I'm like, "No, it's not like I'm getting a new iPhone.
No, cool.
You know, I'm not moving up to the latest, you know, whatever. I think it's a choice. And I think it is important. Mm. And that's why I kind of like this conversation, because it is about a choice. And one is very different to the other. Like you say, you can take your white cane everywhere with you. You fold it up, you put it in the bag, you put it on the chair, and you've got it with you, but it doesn't bother you, and you can go clubbing till 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't know how you do that.
Exactly.
I was born at 75, so I don't never done it. But I think, you know, that's it. And you're actually making a very sensible and responsible decision there, because having a dog and leaving it in all night would just be wrong, frankly.
Exactly. With any dog, like, it's
exactly.
Like, you know, yeah, it's things like in the future, you know, I've always said I would love a chihuahua. I just want a chihuahua. That's a life goal. Like, at some stage, well, I can afford a chihuahua. That's what I'd like. Would I leave a chihuahua for hours on end? No, I wouldn't. Would I leave a Labrador for hours on end? No, I wouldn't. You know, my lifestyle at the moment just isn't conducive to a chihuahua. And I may get a chihuahua. I may not. Just as I may get a guide dog, or I may not. But for the moment, I'm very happy with the cane. But I do see, this is just my observation, as I say, a lot of people seem to talk about the whole, you know, stepping stone thing or an upgrade or whatever. And that's absolutely fine. But I wish people would just say, oh, I'm moving on to something different, rather than this kind of notion that. And I understand that for a lot of people, you know, people think that the guide dog is, you know, a great thing for them and all of that, which of course it is. But at the same time, you know, I think it would be nice to kind of say I'm moving on to a different choice or doing things in a different way.
Georgie, it kind of goes back to perceptions again, doesn't it? It goes back to this idea of, well, if you've got a white cane, then you're visually impaired, okay. But if you've got a guide dog, then you're like proper blind.
Yeah. You want to make that choice and that decision for you. And I think that's what I'm finding frustrating at the moment, is that everyone else has made a decision and we're not getting to as individuals. Like, I'll decide, thanks.
Yeah. Absolutely. My question to you, though, Georgie, just to wrap up, is if you did have a white cane, what would you call it?
Oh, God. Oh, I don't know. Judy Dench.
Judy Dench.
Or maybe Chris Hemsworth, actually.
No, You lost me on that one.
Chris Hemsworth, he plays Thor, the actor.
No, don't know. I've never seen Thor.
Oh, God, he's lovely.
Yeah. Fine. Listen, I know Ariana Grande. That's enough culture for me for one year.
Yeah.
Listen, thank you so much to both of you for coming on. I really appreciate it, Maya Liam, and also to Georgie Morell. Thank you so much for being here, and thanks for joining us in the forum.
Thank you very much.
Thanks ever so much. Cheers.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Well, it is Friday, and that means it's time for this.
Connect Radio.
Welcome to Friday, everyone, and we are checking out what's available in the world of entertainment in something for the weekend. And this weekend, we are starting at the cinema. That's because there is another addition to the universe of Harry Potter and the Wizarding World in Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
An address. What's that?
A safe house in Paris.
Why would I need a safe house in Paris?
Should things at some point go terribly wrong, it's good to have a place to go. You know, for a cup of tea.
The wizarding and non-wizarding worlds have been at peace for over a century. Grindelwald wants to see that peace destroyed.
You want me to hunt him down? To kill him? Dumbledore, why can't you go?
I cannot move against Grindelwald. It has to be you.
You don't suffer from motion sickness, see?
I don't do well on boats.
You'll be fine.
So this is the second installment of the Fantastic Beasts series set in J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World and features the adventures of the magizoologist Newt Scamander. There's a lot of anticipation on this film based mainly on the fans of the Harry Potter series. Certainly even in this office there has been members of the team who have been at midnight screenings and are very bleary-eyed today, I must say. But how has the film been received so far? Well, some people are saying that it's really only for proper die-hard Harry Potter fans. There's a lot of references throughout the movie that only really people who have read the books will actually get. Now, on the flip side of that coin, there is an argument that proper die-hard Harry Potter fans are a little bit miffed with this film because it's playing an awful lot with the canon that has been established in the Harry Potter books. Now, both the films from the Fantastic Beasts series are written by J.K. Rowling, so really it's up to her what she does with her own universe. But we want to know what you think of Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Grindelwald. So if you're checking that out at the cinema, then do let us know. Of course, do check your local cinemas for AD listings across the country. But maybe you don't want to head out to the cinema this weekend. It is rather blustery and bleak after all. So let's find out what's happening on streaming services. Well, Netflix this weekend are releasing a movie from the Coen brothers. It's called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Well, folks, things have a way of escalating out here in the West.
You think the boy's telling the story?
Well, we'll just have to see, won't we?
You know the story.
There are two kinds of people.
Lucky and unlucky.
Hale and frail.
Upright and sinning.
No. Dead or alive.
I'd appreciate it if you'd deposit your weapon in the receptacle by the swinging doors.
And if and I don't.
As I say, this film is from the Coen brothers and more in the vein of Burn After Reading or Raisin Arizona than films such as Fargo or No Country for Old Men. It's an anthology film comprised of six stories, each dealing with a different aspect of life in the Old West.
It stars Liam Neeson, James Franco and Zoe Kazan, and it looks to be a riotous hoot. If you're a fan of the Coen brothers, well, I don't need to tell you how huge it is that Netflix have managed to lure in the Coen brothers, probably because Netflix funded the Fargo TV series, but it's very exciting that such high-profile directors are doing straight-to-Netflix films. Another movie released on Netflix this weekend is The Kominsky Method, and it's another big get for Netflix because the movie comes from Chuck Lorre, he of Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men fame, and it stars Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin.
You know, I wake up every morning, my first thought is, what part of me is not working today?
Yeah, we are passengers on boats slowly sinking.
Your boat is slow? I'm like when the Titanic was pointing up. So how's your love life? You're still seeing, what's her name, Triscuit?
Tristan and no.
Oh, that's too bad. She was kind of cute.
Well, we didn't have much to talk about. You know, she was half my age.
Half your age is still an old woman. Do the math. You have a visitor.
Oh, Sandy. Hey, kiddo. Listen, when I'm gone, why don't you look after Norman?
Me?
Yeah, you're his best friend, right?
I don't know, am I?
No, but don't argue with her.
You got it.
The Kominsky Method, then, is about an aging actor who long ago enjoyed a brush with fame and who makes his living as an acting coach. He's tasked with looking after the man he considers to be his best friend. It looks to be a fantastic movie and one that's really going for the heartstrings. Quite different from Buster Scruggs, but both of those movies available this weekend on Netflix. To the theatre, then, and I had to pick this one out. It's happening at the Darlington Hippodrome this weekend. It's the Full Monty, taking place tomorrow, Saturday the 17th of November, at 2:30 p.m. But the Full Monty has a touch tour at 1 p.m. Yes, a touch tour for the Full Monty. Don't worry, folks. The touch tour only involves finding out what's going on with the scenery and the props. The actors will remain untouched. But this is, of course, based on the smash hit film and adapted for the stage by Oscar-winning writer Simon Beaufoy. This hilarious and heartfelt production has received standing ovations every night and won the prestigious UK Theatre Award. It features Gary Lucy, who has made the part of Gaz his own, with an all-star cast of Andrew Dunn, Lewis Emmerich, Joe Gill, Kai Owen and James Redmond, with songs, of course, by Donna Summer, Hot Chocolate and Tom Jones. You really should drop absolutely everything and go to the Full Monty at the Darlington Hippodrome tomorrow at 2:30 p.m. with a touch tour at 1 p.m. The audio description for tomorrow's Full Monty is provided by Vocalise. And there's a big concert happening this weekend as well. Ed Sheeran will perform as part of the Music for Mental Health event at the Roundhouse in London on Sunday. The singer-songwriter will open the charity concert with an intimate acoustic performance, joining already booked artists Anne Marie and Ollie Murs on the bill at the event. Now, given that Sheeran's last headline show in London came at Wembley Stadium in front of around 70,000 people, well, it's a rare chance to watch him play in such an intimate setting. Ella Eyre and James Arthur have also been added to the event, which is hosted by Rizzle Kicks member and campaign ambassador Jordan Stevens. Music for Mental Health aims to normalise the conversations around mental health, as well as raise money for projects helping young people around the UK. So that's this Sunday at the Roundhouse in London, Ed Sheeran as part of the Music for Mental Health concert. But of course, I've mentioned it before, the weather is not particularly nice at the moment. Maybe rather than going out to a concert, you'd rather stay in and listen to something fantastic. Well, there's two great releases on CD and vinyl and all other playing formats this weekend. The first one is The Greatest Showman Reimagined. This is The Greatest Showman, the movie from this year that did so well. Its mega popular motion picture cast recording is getting a new lease of life from some all-star voices.
I am not a stranger to the dark. Hide away, they say, 'cause we don't want your broken parts.
So it's released today, The Greatest Showman Reimagined, bringing together some of the world's biggest recording artists to sing their own versions of the music movie's popular hits. Keila Seetal's Oscar-nominated song This Is Me will now include vocal additions from Kesha and Missy Elliott for its reimagined remix, while UK Top 40 entry A Million Dreams will be sung by Pink. The What About Us star's daughter Willow Sage Hart makes her singing debut on a reprise of her own mother's track, and what you're listening to just now is Kesha's solo version of This Is Me, which closes off The Greatest Showman Reimagined. That might be one to pick up if you're a fan of modern music, and certainly if you're a fan of The Greatest Showman. And there's another recording artist CD released this weekend with a bittersweet release. It's potentially the final album from Michael Bublé, and it's called Love. Global superstar Michael Bublé is scheduled to release Love today as his first studio album in 2 years, following a 2-year break from public life to spend time with his family. The Canadian singer-songwriter returned to the studio with a new perspective on life and a renewed commitment to honouring the music he has always loved. So this is Love, released this weekend by Michael Bublé. A great one to pick up on your CD, and do expect to hear some fantastic tracks from Mr. Bublé on RNIB Connect Radio over the next couple of weeks and months. If there is anything in the world of entertainment that you're looking forward to over the next few weeks, or if you've had a particularly good AD experience on streaming services, in the cinema, at the theatre, or in concert halls, be sure to let us here at RNIB Connect Radio know about it by tweeting at RNIB Radio, or you can find us on Facebook, RNIB Connect Radio. That's it for me, Chris Wallace. I'll be back with you next Friday with another Something for the Weekend.
Connect Radio.
Well, thank you for that, Chris. That is Something for the Weekend for this week, and that is our show. Back Monday, 10 o'clock on RNIB Connect Radio on Freeview Channel 730, and also on line as well. You can get us on smart speakers and on podcast from 5 p.m. on Monday. Don't forget there are great shows over the weekend on RNIB Connect Radio. Go on, dip in, have a listen. I guarantee you, you will enjoy what you hear. That is all available. You can listen to it on Freeview 730 or online. And as I say, ask your smart speaker. Just say, play RNIB Connect Radio, and you could be listening to us right now. Catch you Monday.
The Daily Connect Podcast.